Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Scottish Parliament, and welcome to this Scottish Futures Forum event. My name is Stuart McMillan, MSP. I'm one of the directors of the Scottish Parliament Scottish Futures Forum, and I'm delighted to see so many of you here tonight, and certainly on a particular a wonderful, beautiful night outside. One of the things that you may have picked up on as you came in the building, it's mobbed. There are a huge number of events taking place tonight. Tends to be the way on a Wednesday evening, anyway. But particularly when you get towards the end of a session, just seems to be far too many events take place, and so it's very much a juggling act in terms of the MSPs trying to go from one to another to another. But I'm delighted to see so many of you here. As you're aware, the Scottish Futures Forum is the Scottish Parliament's futures think tank. It exists to create opportunities for MSPs and also others to think creatively about the long-term challenges and opportunities facing Scotland. It works to bring different people together and also to bring for them to bring their thoughts and their ideas into the Parliament. And this event forms part of the Scotland 2030 programme, which is the Futures Forum's major programme for this parliamentary session. It's an investigation into the kind of country we actually want to see Scotland be in 2030. It's an aspect of an exploration of our culture and also our society. Through the theme discussions, like this one tonight, we plan to challenge participants to think about the long-term opportunities that exist and also to develop the aspirational visions for our future to share throughout the Parliament and also beyond. The focus for this event is how we can build a sustainable future for urban Scotland and also in particular what the role of communities should be regards to regeneration over the coming decade and beyond. We do have an excellent panel to discuss these issues tonight, so I'm going to introduce them first of all. So on my far left, we have Andrew Bowman. Andrew's the head of business development at Riverside Inverclyde, which is an urban regeneration company. He's also the chair of the Developing Young Workforce West Region. Welcome, Andrew. Next to Andrew is Gemma Neville. Gemma is the Director of Voluntary Arts Scotland and also the author of a forthcoming book looking at human rights on One Street in Edinburgh. Welcome, Gemma. And finally, we have Andy Milne. Andy is the Chief Executive of SURF, Scotland's Regeneration Forum. Andy has kindly agreed to kick off proceedings this evening by providing his thoughts on the role of communities in building a sustainable future in urban Scotland. We also were to have Chloe White, but Chloe has had to pull out of this evening. But certainly, Andy, welcome. Yeah. So I'm going to hand over to Andy. Andy's going to do a presentation for 15 minutes. And after that, I'll come back, we'll say a couple of things, and then we'll have replies from both Andrew and also Gemma. And then we can open it up to yourselves for some wider discussion. So we'll hand over to Andy Milne. Andy.
Thank you. I'm going to put my silent phone down here so that I can... I think I've just lost my microphone. Sorry about that. This is going well. I'm going to put it on there. Yes, my phone, that's right, so I can keep to time. Thank you very much for this invitation. It's a really good opportunity for me. It's quite often said that regeneration struggles to get 5 minutes ahead of present reality and often ends up about 5 years behind. So it's a good opportunity to think forward 5 and 10 years. I'm going to say just a little bit about SURF for those of you in the room who don't know what SURF's about. Can we just have a wee show of hands? Who has got no idea what SURF is about? Oh, 50%. Okay, we'll see what we can do about that very briefly. And then I'm going to talk a bit about just my view, SURF's view, of where we're at with community involvement in regeneration, particularly urban regeneration, and where I think some of the main challenges and opportunities ahead are. But I do realise, knowing many of the faces in the room, that there's an awful lot of expertise and knowledge out there in the room. So with your help, Stuart, I will keep to my 15 minutes and we'll get into discussion with Gemma and Andrew and yourselves very quickly. I'm assuming that if I click this, it will move on, Rob. Is that correct? Because that doesn't seem to be happening. Oh, there we go. Thank you. So that's me, and that's what I want to talk about. So, good presentation from Professor Duncan McClelland at the Scottish Federation of Housing Associations last week. He said it's perfectly possible to look about 5 years ahead. This is years and years. Everybody's seen this? Most people seen this? No? Television series, which just slightly extends the reality of where we are now, based on, as Duncan says, you can do that on demographic trends, you can do that on political guesses of where we are, where we're going. So they're picking up on issues of immigration, populist leaders, new technology, and the dangers therein, without any spoilers. 2024 is a kind of focal point of that. It's a 10-year span. There's a mid-bit there. I don't know if anybody recognised this. It wasn't quite the still I wanted for this. This is Blade Runner, 1982, one of my favourite films in the 80s. Harrison Ford there, the main character. This was actually set in 1982 as being LA in America in 2019. And at the time, I thought it was a tremendous, authentic vision of the future. Just messy stuff. Mm-hmm. Messy stuff, elites running dodgy deals, and everything on the streets being a bit messy and broken up. But the one thing, for all they got right in that film, there was about three scenarios in that film where you just want to go, use your mobile phone. They had no mobile phones. So while you can see ahead, it's always interesting to know the things that we can't quite catch. Where's my phone, says Harrison. So, briefly about SURF. SURF is a cross-sector, independent, member-based organisation. We link up everybody involved in regeneration across Scotland. Our main focus is on poorer and disconnected areas. And gathering all that information from all of those partners, one of our main tasks is to help inform policy and practice going forward. We've been around for a long time, an independent charity, and we do lots of stuff, and you can find out about that later on. One of the main things that we do in more hands-on stuff is an Alliance for Action programme supported by the Scottish Government in five particular sites across Scotland. And that's relevant to tonight because that particular work is both community and place-based, but involving all other partners. So, first of all, I want to just say a little bit about where I think we are with Scottish Government policy and regeneration. The main policies at the moment are around empowering communities. There's an increasing focus on place and communities, which has not always been the case in regeneration, and on infrastructure investment through city and regional deals. And this is Aileen Campbell, the Cabinet Secretary of Responsibility, who is making it her business to help us focus on place and communities, and that's very welcome from SURF's point of view. Since 2011, we can go back to the bankers' crash, and I could do another presentation about that in 2008. The Scottish Government responded in 2011 with its regeneration statement of 2011. In fact, that's the last national regeneration statement done by the government. We think there needs to be an update on that. But that statement there was really taking account of the damage that had been done to the property-based model of regeneration, but also acknowledging the flaws in the property-based model of regeneration and saying, really, we need to be much more community-led on this. So behind that, the government have moved in with dedicated funding to support more community involvement. They've passed legislation on community empowerment, community asset transfer. They're moving into land reform. SURF is actively involved in that. I can say more about that later. And also, many of you in the room, many of you are these people in the room, are involved in networks which are specifically designed to support more community-based activity and regeneration, the likes of Scottish Community Development Centre, Development Trust Association, and big agencies like and funders like the Lottery are getting involved in supporting that work as well. Town centres. Scotland is still basically a nation of towns. Over 70% of our population still live in towns. And Douglas at the back there, Scottish Borders Council, led on this with SURF back in 2006. But we've now got round to a position where there's a much stronger focus on towns through the National Review of Town Centres, followed up by an action plan, and a town centre first principle, where we're ever thinking about investments, new buildings, merging services. We always think about what does that mean for the town centre? How can we make that work? And again, that's very welcome. There's been a recent building on that. That one there, the Town Centre First Principle, I think was a really useful... These are links of reality and jargon, but people latch onto these things, and when they latch onto them, that's really helpful. That Town Centre First Principle idea of always thinking about investments in Town Centre First was successful. And on the back of that, David Cowan and his colleagues in the Scottish Regeneration Policy Team in the government have developed something called the Place Principle. Is that familiar to anybody? So this has now been elevated through the processes that I barely understand to the level of the First Minister and the Cabinet, who have now agreed that the Place Principle is what we should be working on. And I went, great. What does that mean? What's going to happen now? But things are beginning to happen now, because we're seeing through infrastructure investment and shifts in the leadership of Scottish Enterprise and the Scottish Futures Trust and thinking about inclusive growth, that national agencies that SURF is engaging with and has been trying to draw attention to the realities and complexities and creativities of place are feeling, I think, that downward pressure of, oh yeah, right, place principle. We need to think about what we're doing in connection with place, with our investments. And that's very useful from our point of view. In city deal activity, I don't think I would be out of order in saying that the first city deal, the Glasgow city deal, and the various local authorities, the seven local authorities involved in that, was very much about quite high-level infrastructure investment. But they've moved quite quickly to thinking about, OK, so how do roads and bridges connect to communities, connect to social regeneration opportunities for communities? So that connecting of national agency thinking into communities is increasingly there. Challenges. I've got three challenges then. So that's the broad policy context. So it's moving in the right direction. It's beginning to connect up communities and place and people more successfully, which is fundamentally SURF's role. However, some challenges I would like to put out there. First of all, my background is in independent community development work. Worked for the community in Wester Hales for a long time. Angela will remember from those exciting years. So I believe in this stuff. SURF believes in this stuff. But when that community-led regeneration policy was announced in 2011, in the early years of the worst recession that any of us have ever lived through, I had a feeling that maybe this wasn't the right time to be doing that. If you're going to ask communities to take responsibility for their own regeneration, you better have the support mechanisms and the resources in there to make that happen, or there's a real danger that the rhetoric will run well ahead of reality. And while I think through the SURF awards and other processes that we see, we can find really successful community-led projects that actually, the ones that are community-led are actually quite rare. Ones that are community-inspired, community-engaged, community-enterprising, yes. So I think we just need to moderate our thinking here a little bit on what it is that communities themselves can achieve. And what's more important is how the assets and challenges and realities of communities and what they are trying to achieve is connected into local authorities and national agencies. There's a risk here, and I won't try and overburden this, we can do it in discussion, that if we don't get this right in this current climate, where there's still swirling difficulties round about us, we might end up damaging the whole concept of community-led regeneration, because it would not be a great surprise to everybody in the room that not everybody in politics or in the officials or in local authorities are completely convinced that's the way to go anyway. So if we are going to be going down and we're asking people to get meaningfully involved in their communities, take responsibilities, it's incumbent on us to make sure that they have not just the resources on a short-term basis, but have the connections and support and infrastructure to make that a meaningful reality. Second challenge. The table is not flat, the playing field is not even, the goalposts get moved. But what happens when anybody is in difficulty is there's a tendency for the powerful to take resources into themselves. There's also a centripetal force of when resources become available, they tend to gravitate to where the market is already operating well, they tend to gravitate towards communities where people already have confidence in assets and networks. And so there's an unintended consequence there of potentially rapidly increasing levels of inequality through unspecified targeting. This building here was built with grant assistance for money which was dedicated for assisting disadvantaged areas. This is just off Queen Street in Glasgow, and there's an Armani Emporium on the ground floor. So there's something going wrong there in terms of where resources are ending up. I'm not saying that anybody's at it. I'm just saying that it's easier to get a safe return on your investment in places where things are already working well and where people are already relatively well resourced. The effect of that is unintentionally to increase poverty and inequality. Sorry, to increase inequality, not necessarily poverty. I've mentioned towns already. A reasonable criticism would be that city deals are focused on the concept of city regions, and yet, as I've said, 70% of the Scottish population still live in towns or villages rather than cities. And we need to be doing more, I think, again, a bit like the community-led model. There are really good organisations in there, Scottish Towns Partnership, Phil Prentice's organisation. The Scottish Government's done really well in supporting that. That's a model which I know is looked at on an international basis. The criticism there, again, would be, though, you're getting lots of sharing of learning and cooperation. You're not getting substantial resources going into the regeneration of towns in the way that you are in cities and regional planning. We can discuss more of that later. Okay, I'm going to go a little bit more positive now, and I'm going to take a drink of water. Opportunities. I think I've just got three of these as well. As I mentioned earlier, I think we are now genuinely beginning to return to place. And I've spoken to people in Transport Scotland, I've spoken to people in Scottish Enterprise have fundamentally shifted their thinking on this. Crown Estates Scotland are now looking at how the assets that they hold and how they might be thought about in a more productive way in engaging with regeneration. That place principle, the connections of national assets, Courtney there working on that with Crown Estates Scotland, those national agencies are beginning to respond to the place principle, beginning to think about places. This is Pat Cassidy of Govan Workspace. That's a long-term, community-based social enterprise which has accumulated a substantial portfolio of buildings and assets and shows really what can be achieved when you link the passion and the knowledge of heritage, local politics, local circumstances with consistent and appropriate support and investment. Creative regeneration, Gemma's field, but SURF has been a long supporter of the links between creativity and heritage and regeneration. This is the same reason that people would get involved in their communities. I've always been slightly doubtful of individuals, no disrespect to anybody in the room, slightly sceptical about people who turn out on a wet Tuesday night for a 17-point community planning agenda as to whether they are actually representative of their community. I think people who get involved in creative activities and the heritage of their place find a sense of belonging and identity and building of networks, which then enables them to understand the other dynamics that are around them and to get involved. So we think creativity and heritage is a powerful dynamic going forward. And the last one I'm going to focus on here is about local democracy. Others roll their eyes, some in the room may roll their eyes at this. We have a problem. Scotland has a problem, a historical problem. Nobody in my working lifetime is going to do anything about it. But when we did our last manifesto and we had a hustings with all the politicians from all the political parties, they all agreed, this is a problem, Andy, and no, we're not going to do anything about it. 32 local authorities. Far too big. Really good folk working really hard, doing really good work. James from Glasgow City Council here somewhere doing great work. There you are. But it's just unreasonable to imagine that a local authority on an average about 160,000 population can genuinely know what's going on in all of the individual communities in their area, the assets and challenges and barriers. IT is helping, James, I agree, but we have a struggle here. Big level of local authorities, communities down here, disconnection and disenchantment, inappropriate blaming of councils for all sorts of things that aren't really their fault, and we're filling the gap in between with social enterprises, housing associations, community councils, all sorts of stuff. Wonderful stuff that happens that we give awards to. It's not a structure. It's not a strategy. So, maybe after my working lifetime, somebody will do something about that. At the bottom there, I've got something there about audit criteria, and this was something really encouraging that happened towards the start of this year. Audit Scotland, as a powerful organisation, beginning to turn their sights towards community empowerment. How can community empowerment help public services, the deliverers of not just local authorities, but education, health, prisons, fire, police? How can greater community empowerment help those organisations, first of all, understand how their services are being received and receive back information that enables them to deliver their services more effectively? As a powerful organisation, recalibrating the criteria that those organisations use to assess their services, that looks like something which might get us closer towards real community empowerment to me. I won't go through these in detail. There are examples of very large-scale regeneration. I've got Clyde Gateway here and Dundee Waterfront. Two key elements in both of those areas would be sustained, substantial, long-term investment and high-quality leadership over time. Ian Manson, and my mind has suddenly gone blank from the guy who led the Dundee Waterfront, which will come back. Thank you, Mike Galloway. The recently retired Mike Galloway. Town centre regeneration comes a lot through the SURF Awards. We do a special category on improved place and town centre regeneration. This is Lochgelly and Kilmarnock, recent winners, because that's at scale that people get meaningfully involved in. Lots of stuff on community-led regeneration, genuinely inspiring little sort of flowers that burst here and there. But we go back and look at the ones that have won SURF Awards years later, and a lot of them aren't there anymore. A lot of them have changed. A lot of them are gone altogether. Back to my point about great stuff going on, genuinely improving people's lives in points of time, but not a strategy. Okay, I'm nearly at the end then. Big challenges ahead. All of this stuff, all of the work that we do, does not happen in isolation. We are globalization of politics, of economics, of culture, of technology affects everything that we do. We are stuck in a position of continuing and rising inequalities, I think. Both socially and politically, that's going to divide us and cause tensions, and we see that already, and that's back to the Years and Years TV programme. Unfortunately, I wish it was different. We are going to see more insecure, low-paid, non-progressive, service-based work, and that's going to be difficult for people in places, particularly people in places which are already disadvantaged. There's going to be generally loss of work to technology, and there's a question there about how we generate roles and respect and remuneration for people in their lives. Is that going to be through their work? We've already lost the grip on work as a route out of poverty, I would suggest. We need to find ways in which people feel fulfilled and respected and remunerated. Universal benefits for individuals across the board might be an answer there. And of course, everybody's really familiar, we have massive challenges in terms of social care and old age demographics. However, positively, and finally, I went to a presentation, it was a set of awards from the Institute of Engineering in Scotland a couple of years ago. It's a revelation to me. Might not be a revelation to you, but there are amazing things going on in Scotland in terms of science and engineering. And I kind of think, yes, there's a really positive future here. Scotland's natural physicality, its natural resources in the sea and the landscape give us real opportunities combined with that science to find green growth successes ahead. I think there's a possibility through the morphing that's taking place in the south of Scotland enterprise partnership, HIE's work, and the way in which social enterprise is changing, that we might end up with a more thoughtful regional, complementary regional specialisation in different parts of the country, rather than trying to make one model fit all, as we seem to have been doing for a long time. People like Catherine Trebeck, ex of Oxfam, making really interesting work on what a well-being economy would look like. reconnecting land and communities. We're doing work with the Scottish Land Commission on that. There's very interesting work being done on vacant derelict land I can say more about later. In this Parliament, tell me where I'm wrong here, Stuart, but 10 years ago, the Scottish Socialist Party proposed a manifesto for free public transport for everybody. It was going to cost about $2 billion, I think. I think that's a good idea. I think there's all sorts of benefits for that. Wage solidarity and basic income, that's the term I was looking for before. I think trying to get people on the same side around wages is going to be really important as the job market continues to change. And I think the status quo, as Aileen Campbell has said, in terms of local government, not just local government, but national government, our participation in democracy, is not acceptable. We have to find ways of changing that. And as I've said already, the government is making some significant moves on that front. However, always expect the unexpected. I can do my best, you can do my best in trying to predict based on trends where we're going, but there's always something going to happen out of left field. That was a bad idea putting that as the last slide, but there you go. That's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Andy, thank you very much for that. Quite a lot in there, and which also we will get after the discussion on in a few moments. But I think your point regarding the last slide, it was going so well until that point.
I regret that now.
But we're going to hand over to both Gemma and Andrew for your initial thoughts before we open up to the floor. So, Gemma first.
Okay. Can you hear me if I speak this sort of tone? Great. Well, thank you for having me. Thank you for this Back to the Future challenge. Despite the slightly dystopian vision presented at the end, I think there's plenty of scope for optimism. In my short offering now, I want to unpack the word democracy, people power, as we are here at the heart of Scotland's democratic home. And I think it's both... it's personal and political, because the personal is always political and the political personal. If we take the people bit of democracy first, and I'll speak in a personal capacity, about 1 mile from here, roughly that direction, is my street, Constitution Street, is its name. And we live in very constitutional times, of course. The arrogance of every generation thinking their time is particularly exceptional. It's not, but we have had a particular focus on national identities, plural, of late. And I was feeling increasingly personally anxious about that change and the pace of change, which Andy alluded to. And 2030 really isn't far off. And I was aware of having voted differently from friends and family in some instances, and perhaps not really understanding one another or having the same vision for the future. So I set about interviewing my neighbours over the course of 18 months. And the biggest learning was really about how to have conversation. And when we have good conversations, that's where the exciting magic happens between people and power, I think. And our politicians talk a lot about community empowerment, community development, particularly in the public policy reforms we've seen in the last decades. And I've always been slightly confused to know, well, which communities? Am I in it? Am I out? Is it who shouts the loudest? Because we're all part of communities, aren't we? Many, and they overlap. Our social, our professional, our digital, our familial. And the magic thing about a street as a community of place is that you know you're on it because you've got an address. And one of the things I love about Constitution Street is our mix. It's truly intersectional in terms of social economic ground and housing, which is increasingly quite unusual. And it's part of one of those towns that Andy alluded to. Leith was its own borough and sometimes feels very much of a town. So that's been the personal experience. And it became increasingly personal. The book itself is more memoir than first intended, available later this summer from good bookshops and my mum, if that interests you. I'm here today, I suppose, because of that learning and also my day job, which is with the National Arts Charity Voluntary Arts. And our role is very much to support and nurture community-led arts development. And the big truism, I think, across places in Scotland, urban and rural, is that our cultural lives, when active, are local. So we've come up to Holyrood tonight to attend an event, and I want to hear examples from all of you shortly. And we might be part of international networks on our social media, with our family and in our professional lives. But where we actively engage in culture, we sing in a choir, if we're in a book group, if we're in a gaming club, that tends to be very local. So that's really interesting, I think. And we're exploring the whole notion of a commons, what that means. And I see commons as a place-based community, roughly the size of a long street, so which is about 150, 200 people, more or less. They're people that you see, and you might not be the best of friends. You didn't choose to live next to one another, but you see one another, and so there's a natural empathy and shared identity of caring about a place. So why that's particularly interesting in the cultural sector, as Zandi said, some of the most exciting things happen in arts and community-led arts in particular, because naturally, when you lean into the creative, you're about imagining and reimagining the future. And that's exciting. So this is the territory we're exploring as an organisation. And examples where I think the commons is flourishing or going well, please contribute your own examples. But I was reflecting on the Stove Network, a previous winner of a Surf Creative Regeneration Award, where Matt Baker and his team and local participants are transforming one high street, reclaiming that civic space that belongs to all. I have a real bugbear when I hear policymakers talk about placemaking, because a place, which is personal and political, is already made. How dare somebody else come in and suggest it's going to be remade? Rather, we want at Voluntary Arts to see strengthened local cultural infrastructure, by which I mean accessible, affordable venues in the most holistic sense. The park is a venue, as is a library, as is a kitchen table. So really reimagining where it is that we have these civic spaces for self-expression, and the networks and the funding to support that. And in community-led arts, voluntary arts, to use our language, people do a lot with a little, but they can get burnt out and tired easily, because it's often the same people that are coming forward with initiative. So I think there's great examples happening in Scotland. My hope for the future is that we lean into the local and connect up the local. So it's not isolationist, rather that great thinker about place, Patrick Geddes from Edinburgh, talked about, I think it was his maxim, think global, act local. And if we do that, then we truly will link up my street to yours, and that will cross national boundaries and all the sort of nonsense and realpolitik that causes us much anxiety at the moment. I think that's plenty from me from now.
Okay, thanks very much for that, Gemma. Andrew, what are your thoughts on Andy's presentation?
Thanks, Stuart, and where to begin? I suppose just to kind of give a bit of background, Inverclyde is a fairly young name in the grand scheme of things, and essentially is better known as Greenock, Gourock, Port Glasgow, and the surrounding towns that are around about the area as well. A lot of my time over the last 3 years with RI has been really to get out and about to promote Inverclyde, something we're not particularly good at and haven't been over the past. And I don't think that's just an Inverclyde issue. I'd say that's probably a wider Scottish issue. And very much in terms of going on the front foot and shouting about your successes, the good news stories, the positives that are coming out, be it community, be it regeneration, be it you know, business or wherever they're coming from. So I have to say it's my passion, and Gemma and I were talking about that at the start. I'm very proud to be from Inverclyde, and again, I think the classic thing you seem to see in Scotland is you almost apologise for where you're from. But if somebody comes in, a tourist or whoever it may be, and we get a lot in Inverclyde through the cruise liners, start talking about the town or start putting it down, you get your back up a little bit and you start to protect it, and you start to, you know, you're the number one supporter or promoter of that area, and that's where pride comes out. And that's where I think, you know, that's not just an Inverclyde thing, I think that's a Scottish thing really, and something we do very well and could do more of going forward. Probably touching on Andy's presentation, it's a real microcosm of Inverclyde, I would say, and where we've been, particularly through Riverside Inverclyde over the last 13 years. It started very much as a focus on regeneration, you know, swathes of cash promised to be able to look at key sites alongside a local development plan to make the necessary improvements, and hopefully in time to attract private sector investment, and with that jobs, repopulation and other positives as a result. And along came the crash in 2008, and with that the challenges. So I'd actually say I think it's remarkable RI's survived as long as it has, and we were set up at the same time as Clyde Gateway. There were six at the time, and it's just the two of us left at the moment. And if you look at us, it's not really apples for apples. We've spent probably around about $80 million in Inverclyde over the last 13 years. Clyde Gateway's touching on $1 billion probably. But there's a lot of similarities in terms of what the projects have been focused on, what the areas required and still require. And I think that's been a really interesting journey. And the key thing I hear most of the time now from people either coming back to Inverclyde or coming for the first time is how beautiful and how much it's changed over the last kind of decade or so. And how much you can see those changes as you drive through the town, as you enter either at Port Glasgow or at Wimms Bay. It hasn't been without its challenges, and a lot again of what Andy touched on was very, very classic of what we are facing currently. We have a great pockets of success. Organisations, either individual led or more statutory or agency led, are having great success, but it's very siloed. And really the focus at the moment for us going forward is very much about trying to bring those closer together, trying to work in more collaborative kind of ways, use almost the umbrella option, and underneath that everybody working together to try and take that forward. And a lot of our focus currently, probably like most of the west coast of Scotland, is repopulation. And it's easy to just look at that in isolation and just think if we build more houses, more people will come and live here and everything will be all right. For me, the classic thing, and probably thinking forward to 2030, would be very much about how we engage business and private sector into that, and ultimately how that regenerates the area, how that regenerates the business economy locally and across Scotland, and most importantly, how that brings jobs to local areas. Because it's not enough to just become a commuter town or somewhere to live because it's slightly cheaper, you're getting more for your pound, if you like, than the city. And the reality is that you'll start to lose that community, and it starts to become just bed and breakfast towns. People stay there, they pay their council tax, but as soon as the weekend comes, in the car, or on the boat, or whatever it is, and they're out and they're off. And there's that juxtaposition of how they re-engage back into local community centres, nurseries. Kids tend to be the best way forward for that as an initial step. But I think that's a really important part for me going forward, is how we join up all of the various different agencies and all the various different areas that are doing great things, but more importantly, collaborate and work together and share resource. And probably again, touching on the last two speeches that you've heard from Jim and Andy, is not relying on those key individuals or those volunteers or those kind of individuals that are leading or really striving for that project because it's personal to them, and creating that sustainable model that when that person moves on or when that individual, you know, retires or whatever it may be, there is still that foundation behind them and that pipeline of succession to ensure that that continues to grow, rather than what we tend to see more often than not is the individual leaves and it tends to go into that area of unknown, and it's really a luck as to whether the person that goes in can pick up from where that other person was standing from. So a lot to cover. Happy to throw that open to the ground, but that would be my initial thoughts.
Okay. Well, certainly thank you to both Gemma and Andrew for your your thoughts. There's a few things I just want to kind of highlight first of all before I open up to yourselves. But also, I do need to make a declaration. I am the member for Greenock and Inverclyde constituency. So Andrew and I, we know each other very well. And have worked together on a couple of different projects in particular. What Andrew just said regarding Inverclyde, I 100% back up. Because it's my community. I grew up in Port Glasgow. I was born in England. My family came from Port Glasgow. I was 2.5 when the family moved back. Port Glasgow is my home. I witnessed the decline of the shipbuilding industry. My father was one of the many thousands who were paid off. He was unemployed for over 3 years. And like many, well, he had to get on his bike, as Mr. Tebbett said at the time, to go and find work. So the community has changed, and Andrew touched upon the issue of repopulation. Inverclyde's population used to be over 120,000. It's still declining. It's just under 80,000 now, but the decline is actually slowing down, but it's still declining. And with an older population, come back to obviously what was in your presentation, with an older population, the National Records of Scotland report of last year had indicated that in Inverclyde, the 75 plus age category between 2016 to 2026 will increase by over 23%. So that's a huge challenge. In terms of that one local authority area. Now, there was a question in the chamber today I was trying to get in to ask a supplementary, and that was to do with the population shift from the west of Scotland over to the east and elsewhere to find employment. And come back to your initial point regarding 70% of the population live in towns. Now, bearing in mind there are strategies for rural communities. The Parliament passed a couple of years ago, they passed the Islands Bill to help Orkney, Western Isles and Shetland, also with an aspect also for Argyll and Bute as well. So in terms of the regeneration of towns, do towns actually have enough support? Do towns actually, yeah. Is there enough focus on towns? Notwithstanding that some things obviously have happened thus far. I'm just going to one other point before I open up. It's just that you mentioned the three different challenges in your presentation. I thought were extremely strong. Also the issue regarding the urban regeneration companies. That was seen as a model, but it wasn't the first time that type of activity actually happened, whether in Inverclyde or elsewhere. Having that kind of 10-year model, that 10-year business to do whatever. And then we've got the huge investment that's going on regarding the city deal monies. The different city deals across Scotland. By 2030, will they deliver what's anticipated? Certainly for the towns and cities and all the communities. And then my final kind of point at this point is just your final slide. Will Brexit be similar to what happened in 2008? And the short, medium and long-term effects of coming out. And so what will Scotland be like in 2030 as a consequence of that, notwithstanding the issue of whether constitutional change happens or not happens?